life's gone down the drain. Your body's wrecked with pain. There's just one thing to blame. Dynamite in the brain.
It's episode 325 of Dynamite in the Brain. I'm Brian Smith, and over on the other end of the country, it's Anthony Askew.
Hello, everyone.
And this week we're joined by Lewis Smith to discuss the 1987, or the second, I think. Is it the second or the first? There's two in 1987.
I think it's the first 87 one.
Yeah, it's the July 1987 Toei Manga Matsuri. Yes, this came out in on the 12th of July. It's the second one. It's the 18th of July, 1987. Get all our facts right eventually.
I could have swore it was the first one. When I was looking at lists, I'm sure this was listed first.
It's not, no. Well. It is the second one of 87. The first one was Grim Fairy Tales, The Golden Bird, a Shin Maple Town film, and Supernova Flashman Great Reversal Titan Boy. So I assume that's the Supernova Flashman must be the Sentai. Which was replaced by Mask Man in this one. So yes, the four films, we've got all four this time. The four films we'll be covering are Superhuman Machine Metalder, Hikari Sentai Mask Man, Saint Seiya, and Dragon Ball Movie 2, Sleeping Princess in Devil's Castle. So, we'll start with what I think was the first thing, if you'd gone to see it on the day, which would be Superhuman Machine Metalder.
Ah, I didn't know what the order was. Because of, I think, the list order. I thought the list order was, yeah, I think I've watched these back to front.
I don't know for sure.
At the end of it,
I don't make.
I think it was you got the 220s and then the 45.
Yeah, so that's what I figured. Yeah. Metaldar, and people of a certain age, if you watch this, you'll be going, "Hey, I know this guy from VR Troopers."
Oh, I was doing some googling.
What kind of stuff?
I don't know. I feel like we'll be spoilers all over.
Well, we're going to spoil the entire thing, so...
It's really 20 minutes of spoilers.
I was going to say, yes.
I feel like I could talk about this for the entire podcast.
I was going to say, is it mainly identifying which vehicles have been dressed as tanks?
No, I've not even jumped into that. The very first... So I made notes throughout this, and the very first thing I noticed, like literally the first 20 seconds of the film, you always practice with a sword in the windy sea, it won't rust the steel.
Yeah. Yes, I've written, my first note was, "Is your youth shining?" Which I think is the first line of the song. And then we see our hero running into the sea with his sword and then swiping at waves.
And if there's one thing we know about Japanese steel, it's amazing quality and, you know, it's not bad at all.
I've got the window open, so you may well be hearing the ice cream van coming around.
I really forgive you if you want to go and get one.
I just had a vegan cornetto, so I'm good.
It's way too cold for ice creams.
It's never too cold. But if you've had a hot meal, it's nice to have an ice cream to top it off. Particularly if you're under the weather. Yes, all the things kids like: swords, bikes, armies of monsters, minivans dressed as tanks, as we go through, it's like a car which turns into a plane, barely. That's in the opening credits, but not in the rest of the movie.
I was really
impressed by the effects for that.
Yeah, the models and stuff are pretty good. I quite like some of the monster designs as well.
Oh, they're all good. All of the designs are good.
And then we get a little introduction for the parents to explain who on earth this character is, who the kids have dragged me to. He is he's probably older than that. He's been asleep 42 years. He is Ryusei Tsurugi, and he's also known as Super Android Metalder.
Cool. And he dresses a bit like Future Trunks as well.
And he's up against the evil emperor god Neros and his evil army, which is divided into four different armies. So
you want us to remember the names?
The armored army, the robot army, the monster army, and the armed tank army.
I can't even pick a favorite.
The armored army, because they're the ones who get something to do this story.
They're all pretty well designed. Was this the top Sentai show of its time?
This is one of the Metal Heroes ones, so it's not one of the most remembered Metal Heroes. The Space Sheriff ones are the ones people remember more fondly, because they're the first bunch.
Because I think the first thing I did, I paused this after a few minutes. I was like, I recognize the bad guy. I recognize the main character. I thought it was the R Troopers. And I started Googling.
Yeah, it's one of the two series used for VR Troopers. I can't remember.
Three.
Three, was it, though? Okay.
Yeah, that's what kind of blew my mind. So, VR Troopers used three different Sentai shows. So apparently
Toku show, these
Japan,
are
the three characters were never in the same screen together.
Yeah, these are Metal Hit. The Sentai ones are specifically the ones with the teams of colored, dudes. So these are the Metal Heroes series, as opposed to the Sentai series or the Kamen Rider series.
Oh, fair enough. I don't know the specific stuff. I was quite amazed by the fact, because I never caught on to this when I was a kid and watched VR Troopers. And apparently, the way they cut the scenes together, the different individual characters fighting different individual bad guys, but with different floating minions in the background behind them that were never in the group shots.
You see, I think I knew it before I saw VR Troopers. But that's because I was reading anime magazines at the time, and they'd explained it to me before it ever passed before my eyes.
Like 6 or 7 years old, 7 years old or something. So
yeah.
Well, they canned this VR Troopers after two seasons because they ran out of stock footage of three shows, which seems like
a bit of an oversight. How could they possibly run out of three shows? And VR Troopers isn't entirely made up of those shows. It does have its own, like, American cast, doesn't it? How is that possible?
That's the amazing thing. I actually need to go and watch some YouTube videos on this or rewatch the early episodes and stuff. But that was just I was more distracted by the VR Troopers at first than I was by the entire film.
Well, VR Troopers had 92 episodes. The first series is Metaldar and Spielban. And I think between them, they only have, like, 39 plus 44, so that'll be 83. And Space Sheriff Shader has 49. So, and then when you've got to cut all the actual story stuff out to only leave the action scenes.
Oh, that's genius. So when they went to season two, they went, oh, he gets an upgraded suit, so they could use a different show.
Yes. An earlier show.
See, when you said two seasons, I was thinking, like, I don't know, two 26 episode.
No, 92
you know,
episodes, apparently.
That's reasonable.
Yeah. But he finished unresolved.
I'm not surprised. I just always thought it just wasn't popular enough, and that's why it was nipped in the bud.
So we go to Emperor Neros's Ghost Bank, which is a nice-looking soundstage set where the four enemy commanders appear from their themed doorways, and they discover the Emperor is missing. His disembodied voice tells him to assemble all the monsters, where he explains that he's self-isolating and he wants to find out which one of the monsters is worthy to replace him. And whoever beats Metaldar can be his heir. So then we check in on all the armies. The armored army are praying. The robot army are upgrading themselves. The monster army just appear to be having a party. It's just the leader, and then all the other monsters don't appear to talk. They just make noises. And the armed tank army are outside doing some target practice.
They have a lot of motorbikes.
They do. And then we check in with our hero and his assumed girlfriend. She's just there because she's in the show, I think. And maybe to wear that swimsuit for the dads.
That swimsuit is the thing that I thought was the most inappropriate out of all of these films.
That's what I thought when you said you'd seen
some. How come? What's so? I didn't think was that.
It's
you know.
It's very revealing, and it appears to be a very cold day.
Yeah, I think the reason they never zoomed on that swimsuit, I think that swimsuit was semi, it was like cotton. It wasn't like normal swimsuit material. And I think it was sort of semi see-through.
Yeah.
And I think the shots were trying not to stay on her for too long and definitely not trying to zoom.
I honestly didn't pick up on any of that. I was too focused on Ryusei's rock hard abs.
Well, that's true. There's a little something there for the mums as well.
So,
having watched a whole bunch of more modern Toku stuff, it's like there's always seems to be a lot of stuff for the dads and mums thrown in. She doesn't do anything apart from then gets told to hide when the tank army spots them, and then later he comes and recovers her.
She seems to be shivering when they come back to her.
Yes.
Which I couldn't decide if that was her meant to either have been being scared or legitimately they'd just been filming for that long she was freezing.
He goes off to deal with the armed tank army because there's two of them are flying around.
As he goes off,
yeah,
you notice that they got the actually there's some really good running scenes in this, but as he's running, I wonder how heavy those Sentai suits were, because I bet they filmed 20 yard dashes and he had to stop and catch his breath for half an hour.
And then he summons his motorcycling sidecar, Side Phantom. And he deals with one of the flying villains by just driving straight into him.
I was like watching you on Red Dead yesterday, Brian.
Then eventually all the armies appear. He's surrounded. So he's going to have to run away amidst many, many explosions. He uses one of his powers to detect that there's a cave in the side of the quarry. So he punches his way through the quarry wall.
Which looks great.
And hides in the cave where he finds an underground stream. He follows that and he's back at the pool. The pair of them are completely eluded, the bat monsters now, and they visit a temple, where he goes and observes a statue of Buddha and Kanon and copies their moves using another one of his superpowers.
Did you notice the overdub?
I didn't know.
For some reason, when he looks at the Buddha, he then talks and they have overdubbed him with another voice explaining something.
I guess it was just ADR and maybe the lines changed and they got the narrator in to do it. Oh, I think he also has a different voice as, Metal than when he's being the human actor.
This was a different voice, yeah. Which was weird. But the only thing I was thinking was this was maybe him downloading knowledge.
What a different voice.
Yes.
Maybe his internal monologue voice is different from, like, my voice, how I sound in my head is different how others perceive it, so. Deep.
Then a couple of the armored army show up to duel him, if it is really a duel when it's 2-on-1. These are the general brothers, Tagski and Tagsklon. So what else can he do when fighting 2-on-1 but run away again? They chase after him and find him meditating on the edge of a cliff so they can only attack him from one side. He manages to grab Tagsklon and uses him to parry his brother, knocking the brother off the cliff. He then heart punches Tagsklon, killing him, but in Tagsklon's final action, he stabs our hero in the foot.
Ah, that looks so painful.
I can't believe how strong he is to bend the swords. That's one of my screenshots.
Lewis is sending us a screenshot. He's super powerful. He's a big old cyborg. I mean, I'm really surprised.
Yeah.
I don't know quite. Oh, he's android even. Yeah. So I don't know. Does he have like pain receptors? I guess it's just like can't move is more the issue. So he sounds like there's a vision of the older brother's attack and then he blocks it. And then he gives him a karate chop with added electricity, which probably has a name, but he doesn't call it out. So, we don't find out. And then we check back in on the villains and it turns out Neros was fine all along. He was just trying to force his armies to work together. It's like, do you understand now? You got to teamwork. Come on. But still, if one of you beats Metal Death, then you can inherit the empire. Yes. Even though I've just admitted to you lied to you about one thing. This thing I'm absolutely true of.
For a 20-minute film, they do a lot. 20 minutes.
I enjoyed this. I think I enjoyed it more because I'd watched it after the Masked Man one.
This was the last of the four films I watched. I think I watched them in the order on the list. I enjoyed
this.
This was the first I watched. The designs of this are better. The outfits, everything's pretty damn good in this. The only thing is at the end, and I don't think you'd have, if we rewind 20, 30 years to when this came out and the quality of TVs you were looking at, you wouldn't have noticed the issues. Maybe on a big screen in the cinema, you would have. Like, and the issues are like the costumes, you can tell they're foam and stuff. Well, I don't remember that on the other shows and whatever, but it's a kid's film, so it's fun. I almost think it was a waste of 20 minutes. It deserved to be longer.
Oh, right, I see. Perhaps. When you said 20 or 30 years ago, I was about to say, Lewis, this is 87. And I remembered that is 30
years ago.
33 years ago now. 33. I think this looks great. I bought into this from second one. I think all the choreography is far superior than Mask Man or whatever's coming up later. And I think some of the camera work while they're like running through the forest and stuff.
Are you talking about the bit where they're like running sideways through the trees like in the
Samurai? I think that's really good. I think that's really well shot.
There were some good scenes in this.
Yeah. I think it's to watch this first, I was like, God, if the other films are as good as this, I'll be a happy boy.
If I was to say from anyone to watch any one of the four films that we're going to discuss today, it'd be this.
I think so.
Actually, I don't. I mean, I liked it, but it wouldn't be my pick of the four.
It's over. So it starts and it's just bang, bang, bang. And then it's like, oh, I would quite fancy like some more. So
yeah, this has got a good, I think it has a good pace. I think it uses its 20 minutes well, better than our next thing. Mask Man does. So this is Hikari Sentai Mask Man. Let's find out where in the order of things this is. So this aired February 87 to February 88. Does this tell me it is the 11th Super Sentai series? And apparently it's the first Super Sentai series that showcased each member having their own individual vehicle that forms the robot.
Oh.
Okay. I forgot to mention, Metalder was developed by Susumu Takaku, who also wrote Mazinger Z, Sakigake Otoko Juku, the Toei Spider-Man, and Battle Fever J, the origin of the Sentai series. And directed by Takeshi Ogasawara, who did all the Metal Hero shows through to Soul Brain, and did Kamen Rider Black, and he also did the Sentai series Zero Ranger, the one which became Power Rangers, the first Power Ranger. Ironically, both of the directors of both Metalder and Mask Man have a section called Sudden Death on their Wikipedia page. They both died suddenly, apparently. I don't know if they were both after parties, but they were. I mean, Takeshi Ogasawara also has like loads of lists about how much people were scared of him as a director.
Scary?
Yes, described as a scary uncle and apparently constantly swearing on set. So Mask Man is developed by Hirohisa Soda, who did all the Sentai shows between Goggles 5 and Five Man, and also anime-wise did Future Police Urashiman, and directed by Takeo Nagaishi. And in this one, we open with a bodybuilder making our heroes explode from a block of ice, and then we get a whole load of stunts, dancing, and fun in the sun. And my appraisals of our team were the hero, the tough dude, who's kind of dressed up like denim Kenshiro.
Yeah.
A soft lad who's dressed in a sailor suit. Your mum, and I guess who's supposed to be the hot girl of the team, is the fifth one.
Mm. They all look like they work at like a dolphin center or like a sea life center or something, except maybe denim dude.
Yeah. Didn't get any of their names. Very few of them get anything to do in the film.
Don't forget their leader.
Oh, I just thought they said he was. Oh, yeah, there's like a guy a floating adult in the opening credits who I assume is their mentor.
Oh, no, see, I'm not thinking of him. I'm thinking the dude who gives, like, an order. I thought he was their leader. Because it's the same dude who's in Takeshi's castle.
Oh, is that right?
Yeah, so I instantly recognised the face. I was like, that's General Lee from Takeshi's castle. But he's not called General Lee in the, like, original. But Hayato Tani is his name.
There's some phrases here. Let's laser magnum and fire shot bomber. Stood out in the opening credits.
Did you catch the opening credit? I can't tell if this is the guys that subbed it or not. But where they put what the name means or something like that, it says Grown Ups in Spandex Presents.
Oh, that's just the fan subgroup. That's the fan subgroup. That's nothing to do. That's all it was.
Yeah.
So a mermaid is here. And also an evil lady general. Apparently, though, we quickly learn in the dialogue that this lady is a prince. I then referred to the Power Rangers wiki, and apparently it's a woman who was raised as a man. Because I think her sister is on the good guy's side, possibly in that control room.
I thought they referred to her as a woman in the film.
They don't.
Or was that subtitles?
No, I think they referred to her as a prince.
They definitely say prince multiple times.
Yes.
Me just jump into my own conclusions.
So this is, the mermaid is called Lelay, and yeah, she swims in an ocean of tears that have been wept by the people who live above ground. And yeah, the prince is lying to her, I guessed, about her only being able to live here. That turns out to be true. It's almost as if I've seen enough children's shows to spot the plot lines.
And it's not at all a swimming pool. You can't even tell.
She's singing. Don't forget, she's being forced or asked
to sing. I'm trying to remember what the monsters are called. The types of monsters.
Oh, Horn Dogler.
Dogler, okay. I'd written Dogler down and I was like, surely Dogler can't be the right name.
Well, I thought that. I was like, I've made a typo here, and I had to quickly Google it. And I was like, oh no, it is Horn Dogler.
It looks like a crazy Evero 1.
I think it looks scary.
So you know when Eva loses its, like, its thing and its teeth comes out and everything.
Mm.
I thought it looked like that.
So I don't think it looks as good as any of the monsters that were in the previous thing. That's the sad thing. I was like, oh, I mean, it looks quite good, but I just don't think it looks as good. Even though it's got a great name.
I think it was the best looking thing in this whole film.
I'm going to say
the prince who's actually a lady was probably the best looking thing in the entire film.
Yeah, maybe, yeah.
The Pink Ranger's whip is the best looking thing in the whole film. That whip is badass.
I meant to get a screenshot of when that hits the floor and you can see the explosives going off.
So her singing voice reacts with Horn Dogler's voice to cause an earthquake, which then causes our heroes to fall into the underground, where our soft lad is instantly smitten with the mermaid. And we have our first fight, in which I looked at the timer and I was like, we're only 5 minutes in. This feels like an entire episode's worth of plot has happened in 5 minutes. Not plot, but like events. It's like...
Yeah.
They rescue the mermaid / kidnap the mermaid because she doesn't really want to be rescued at this point. There's more fighting. They're now above ground with the fighting. We see like the set of, I presumably, the recurring base of the what they call it, the Underground Empire Tube, which is another fairly nice soundstage set. And we learn that the evil prince was lying. Now sing, mermaid, sing. We're now back underground because they got the mermaid back. Then there's a giant mole mecha drives through the underground where they get the mermaid again. They're now going to head to the ocean. Now we get the proper fight where they turn into their superhuman forms and we get the explosions, we get the ribbon dancing attacks. Then old energy beast Oklahoma shows up and he makes Horn Dogler grow big by making him stand closer to the camera.
Oh, is that how they did it?
That was how they did it.
He makes him grow big after he's been defeated and dead and gone.
That must be the recurring thing, that little annoying creature coming out.
Yeah, this Oklahoma feels like, seems like he does not enjoy his job because he seems to use all his energy up making these monsters grow big.
There's got to be one where they make him grow big. There has to be an episode.
Then all their vehicles arrive, they combine, and they rip through all their attacks. Great Five, Great Gun, Gyro Cutter, Photon Electric Riser, Final Aura Burst. Dogler does not get a shot in, I don't think, in this fight.
We've only got 20 minutes.
They don't call it Great This, Great That. Everything has got a masky name, hasn't it?
Yes.
Stop saying masky.
Yeah, he's masky during the hand-to-hand combat, yeah, but... Then he just drops dead, and then they say goodbye to the merc. She shows her real form. She's actually a mermaid, and she heads back. She realizes she can swim in the ocean. She does not need to stay underground, trapped by monsters. Then my thought was, hang on, the last time we did one of these, we had another, the Akko-chan thing had a mermaid in it, a mermaid plot in it, with the dolphins. Yeah. I was like, is there always a rule that anytime there's a summer one of these films is going to wedge a mermaid in? And then it ends on a really expensive chopper shot. I was like, oh yeah, no drones in 1987.
One of my notes was literally, they had the budget for that.
Yes.
Cause that must
Maybe they just knew someone. Just like, who was a big fan of Horn Dogler.
I feel like watching this gave me the closest experience to being a parent in 1987, taking their kids to this, of being really lost.
What am I watching?
Yeah. I'm just like, I have no idea what's happening. It's happening very fast. I have no grip on who any of these characters are, except really the mermaid and the evil prince. I could not get invested in the heroes at all.
My notes for this, I'm going to read through them, because it probably... the quickest thing. Masked Man. So bodybuilding gives you powers. Grown-ups in spandex. How do they film the jumps at the beginning when they sort of jump over and somersault? WTF mermaid.
Good, doesn't it?
You can tell it's in a studio building. Horn Dog looks like a crazy Evo. How many people
Horn
died?
Dog.
Horn Dog. Horn Dog is how I read it. How many people died when that building collapsed and they didn't address it? There must be a huge industry for the explosive in these shows. The FCRX-7. Why is she in the cave? Why are there no other mermaids? How does she not know about the ocean?
Because she's been bred with the fake ocean of tears. She thinks that's the only... She's been lied to by the prince.
So how does she, like, know how to live and do things and talk and everything?
Obviously she does, but I think she's kind of been raised from a young mermaid age... in this fake Ocean of Tears place, which she was led to believe that's where she's got to stay to live. Just like when you get a fish in a fish tank, they don't know any different from that little tank that they're in. That is their Ocean of Tears.
Oh, yeah.
You don't try and marry a fish.
I've seen the bit where he's driving away, and yeah, that's so much explosions going on.
So they always somersault at the right time. That was brilliant, actually. They always seem to somersault as they get hit. So it's like as they do the somersault, they kind of flex their back to be where the explosion will be. Masky, everything. I think there were some really, really dodgy camera changes. And then I think my final note, other than the copter shot, was not sure what value this added to anyone's life, including the actors.
There's a bit where they jump onto a giant rock, which is clearly rewinded.
Yes.
I think they do. I mean, look, thinking back, I think they do pretty well with what they're working with.
Yeah, I quite like.
I think all these kind of stuff.
Like the edits in the fights, and I quite like when they bring out their just gigantic cannon for no other reason but just make the kids go and buy the cannon.
He's got a little backpack on and everything. What does the backpack do?
I don't know.
Probably power pack.
Yes.
doesn't look like it's a joint. I'm not going to ask those.
I like the vehicles and stuff. The robot's a little underwhelming, but again, the fight's over quickly with the robot. It's just the characters don't come across at all.
But they could in like an episodic nature. I think you get to see the big denim dude being a bit of a bully, but like.
Yeah, I think that's the issue with the doing like a 20-minute Sentai team is you got five characters. And
it was a bit weird as well. The way it opened and they all just jumping into the pool.
Oh, the void. Yeah.
It's summer. They're having fun in the sun.
So where's that mermaid now go? Just out into the ocean and. At least he was probably getting fed by the prince.
Yeah, she goes to get captured by some annoying teenage boys in Akecha.
He probably gets eaten by a killer whale.
A killer whale. Yeah. I think I like it more now that I'm laughing about it than I did initially.
This one was... I think that this would be a good film to watch whilst drinking.
Oh, I think the first one is, just because it's actually good as well.
The first one is when you start to drink. This is when you're drunk.
Yeah, probably.
Just watch all four of these. I feel like this one also, I think, suffers a little more than Metalder did in having the tops and bottoms sliced off the picture. But not as much as the anime films suffer.
Okay, that would have been... That might have changed some things because I thought it maybe means you'd have seen the costumes a bit more zoomed out and you're not paying quite as much attention to the detail.
Yeah.
Or for me, I get distracted by stuff like that.
Yeah. These Toei remasterings are always, chopping a 4:3 into a 16:9. It's, pretty annoying. I didn't notice it too much in Metalder, noticed a bit more in this. And then we get to Saint Seiya and I was like, this feels claustrophobic. How much is missing? Excuse me. Okay. I would say that I do like this. I do like the soundstage sets in both this and Metalder because there's not enough of that in the modern stuff. It feels like they may have like the limits of like one and quite often they just use that for the good guys' base. And the bad guys' bases are not as impressive. So in the current one, which just started, Kira Major, it looks like the bad guys' base is just entirely black with some flags. And in the last one, Rear Solga, it was the bad guys' base was inside an underground car park. That was part of the joke, but it was also clearly a part of a... cost saving, because I've seen that same underground car park in the Kamen Rider airing at the same time. Well, there you go. On to Saint Seiya the movie, now known as Saint Seiya Evil Goddess Eris, or Eris the Evil Goddess. And this is the second time we've watched Saint Seiya in recent months.
Fresh in the mind.
I'm now thinking this opening music is really good. I really like this opening theme. And my first note is, God, this 16:9 slice is horrible. It's so claustrophobic. So the knights are hanging out at the orphanage where Seiya and his childhood friend were raised. And they're impressing the children and explaining, you've got cosmos in, everyone's got cosmos in all of them. So their cosmos are like, they're like, oh. That means we can beat you up. And they all pile on top of him.
They do.
But as they show up, there's a car crash.
Oh, yeah, which he manages to stop with a melon.
That's it, yes.
Yeah.
This is...
And the car wheels just don't stop spinning, and the driver doesn't even get out, despite having nearly killed some children.
Yes. So this is all set up introducing the original for the movie character... Ellie in the
Hyoga?
Subs.
Oh, her.
No, Hyoga's a regular.
Ah, okay.
Cygnus, I believe, Hyoga. And, they kind of hit it. She's obviously got a crush on him. At this point, I'm like, how old is she? Because I have to remind myself, it's like Seiya's 13. Hyoga's 14. the oldest of any of these characters is Icky, who's the old man of 15 years old.
Whoa, wait, how old's the brother? Is that the brother?
That's the older brother, yes.
How's
what,
the
he's 15?
He's 15, yes.
God.
The younger brother was the most annoying character in the film.
Shun, yes. So Eri and Hyoga are hanging out. They see a falling star, which is actually an apple.
A gold one.
Yes. And as the shooting star passes, a mountain blows up. Eri wanders into the woods and finds a broken boat with the glowing apple on it. Then we see a guy emerge from a coffin. And Eri apparently is now possessed and evil when Athena finds her. I don't think in that first episode we didn't get to Athena's deal, so she's like Athena and a friend of Saya's. Because Saya's always referring to her as a human name, and the others are kind of referring to her as Athena.
Mm-hmm.
More coffins open.
I was just impressed how touching an apple raises people from the dead.
Yes.
It's gold, though!
That's seemingly apples. What happens. She seemingly touches the apple and the coffins burst open.
More coffins burst open as Miho lets the guys know that Ellie's missing. And then we see Athena is like in a crucifixion pose captured in some Greek ruins. And now Eri is dressed in a Greek robe and is carrying a trident and a golden apple. And she's actually the goddess of Discordia, Eris.
Goddess of Discordia. She's now got an evil face. Yeah. Scary face.
And so she uses her trident to shoot fire across town into the wall of the house in the orphanage with a message in Greek and also a map of where to find them to the saints.
That's a good idea, but what if she hits somebody on the way? Dead. One of the kids in the school, dead.
I guess she doesn't care. She's evil.
Ah, she's a baddie, yeah.
And then we're introduced to our villainous knights. We've got Jaeger, Ghost Saint of Orion. Christ, Ghost Saint of Southern Cross. Maya, Ghost Saint of Sagittar. Jan, Ghost Saint of Scutum. And Orpheus, Ghost Saint of Lyra. I think they kind of make it clear, I think Christ is just a coincidence that his name's Christ and he's got a very Christian. I think Orpheus is the only one who is actually the person they are of legend. They are called the Ghost Five.
What a great name.
And then fights. This is what you're here for, kids.
Everywhere.
Fights. Saya fights Maya. Where Saya wins, but is hit by a poison dart that Maya mentions is going to kill this guy. And he needed one to hit. That'll kill him. Hyoga fights Christ. I believe Hyoga's like the saint of the Northern Cross. So there's like I recognize.
Juxtaposition of the
yes.
two.
Yes. Christ is winning, but, they use their powers against each other. Christ gets a blow on Hyoga, but then freezes up because Hyoga wants to question him. Then Christ breaks free and he's winning, but then Eris sees an opportunity to hurt Hyoga because Hyoga's she's still feeling the memories of Ellie has for Hyoga inside her. So she throws the burning spear through Christ's heart to hit Hyoga, but that does not kill him either. Then we see Saya starting to feel the effect of the poison.
Blood vision.
And then we have Jan versus Shiryu. Jan loses after beating Shiryu to a pulp. But then.
That's the shield boys, isn't it?
Yes. Then Shiryu launches all of his cosmos at him at once, which punches through his shield into his heart.
Badass.
Which also causes all his armor to fly off when he does this. Orpheus versus Shun. Orpheus almost wins, but then Icky shows up. But uses his first power, which shows you the afterlife, but it.
I think it's a scary vision.
Yeah. But Orpheus is I've already died once. Hell's not going to frighten me. So then Icky uses a different power and kills him for real.
This is where I noticed the, like, when he uses that power, there's like a shot where, I guess there's fire around the villain. And for one frame, for some reason, it mirrors the shot. It just jumps to the other side. I couldn't even grab a screenshot of it because it was one frame. If you watch that moment back, you see the character, like, flip to the other side, then back again for an instant.
Does he do it on the second time he does it on the other guy?
It doesn't, actually. I was like, I thought it was just the same shot, and I was like, oh no, I'll keep an eye out, and it doesn't, so.
Well, yeah, yes. I mean.
Watch back.
It works, because the Saint Seiya fight seems almost surreal in there.
Oh, yeah, of course, action. Yeah. Which is, like, it's fine for, like, 3 seconds and one frame. I don't know why.
Seiya gets up to where, Athena is, but then he's stopped by Jaeger. So it looks like that's going to be the fight. But no, stand back, Seiya. Here's Ikki to save you, because you've just collapsed and fallen off a cliff.
And he's only 15! What the hell? It's insane.
But Jaeger defeats him using Megaton Meteor Crash, which involves him, like, doing a really ridiculously super fast spinning kick. But not spinning on the normal axis that you spin on for a spinning kick. On the other axis. So he's like running along like a wheel. But wait. Saint Seiya. Seiya is pulling himself up. Because friendship will pull us through. You stupid dead man who thinks friendship is over once you die. So this is basically the bit where kids are going to get excited. Like, our hero's coming through. He's operating on the cosmos alone, he tells us, because he's lost all his senses. And then he brings out the golden Sagittarius armor,
Is that after he gets a big kick to the face from that dude? Like a really bad kick to the face that should kill him.
But this is what you paid your money for, seeing this power.
It is.
I think this is like the most recent My Hero Academia movie of using a power that you've not seen yet in the normal anime. They have a fight and they tell us that Seiya's fist has turned into a giant meteor. Which allows him to defeat Jaeger, and then he fires an arrow through Eris's like head, like a Yu-Gi-Oh. I was like, oh, that's where Yu-Gi-Oh got those. That possession headband thing from is this sort of thing here. Through the headband she's wearing, which goes through her head and then destroys the apple as well, which has been draining Athena's power all this time. And that causes everything to start to collapse and they have to leg it. Which is probably the best bit of animation in the entire film is the collapsing temple.
Yep.
And they think everyone else is dead, but oh no, here they come out of the cave.
All safe and sound.
All safe and sound. I think even Eri's fine after having an arrow shot through her head. And they wander off.
No, Ellie at that point,
yes. Yeah. And they wander through fields of grass, presumably back to the school. That's your Saint Seiya film. That's your 45 minutes of just punching and kicking and almost dying.
So my notes on this. There's a really convenient restraint on the battlegrounds that they go to, of these ruins and everything that they stick Athena into. It's like, that was handy. How did they even get her arms through those holes? Because they got her strung up on that cross.
She's a god. That's... It's fine.
Magic, Lewis, magic. Believe in the horoscope things.
It's slightly more...
Seiya has... So the next thing, Seiya has really crap armor. It literally covers hardly any of his body, so he's just getting smashed into bits where he doesn't have armor, and that's why he gets shot.
But his cosmos is what protects him, Lewis! Have you learned anything?
It didn't. I don't know if... If anyone watching this has ever seen it, Saint Seiya's got these really fantastical moves and everything where they do these little dances or these little poses before they fire it, and the poses are meant to kind of signify the constellations and everything. If you've ever seen Supergirl, have you seen what Supergirl looks like when they do the special effects without the special effects? So when they just have the people jump or move their arms about and everything.
Are we talking the current Supergirl?
Yeah.
No.
Oh,
bad CG from it though.
I'll link to you after. Before the, if you see what they do before the CG, it looks ridiculous. And I'd kind of love to see what this would look like if they didn't put all the special animation around everything. So it just looks like weird dancing. The friendly Dharma overcomes a smashed and poisoned body. So the friendly Dharma is what I called Saint Seiya getting his power up. His power up lets him shoot off an arrow. And then the Akira bomb goes off, which I think was the best, like Brian said, it was the best looking animation of the whole thing.
Well, the reason he gets the arrow is because he's like half Sagittarius. It's like a Sagittarius thing at that point, isn't it?
It is, yeah.
Oh, yeah, it just kind of appeared out of nowhere, though.
Yeah, that's because it's the gold, his gold cloth power up, so,
yeah.
Golden loin.
We've seen episode one, Lewis. We're
experts.
Part of this world now.
I think I watched Seiya a long time ago. So, I'm kind of familiar with some of it, like when he starts to master Pegasus punch and stuff as well. And then when they were running away, I was thinking, who's got Athena? Because Seiya just picks up his mate, who's next to Athena, who's like, yeah, you're strong like me, I'll leave the goddess. So, and then my other note was everyone recovered from their brutal fights in the avalanche and was just fine.
Yep.
I don't like Seiya's helmet in this, mind. I will give you that. I prefer the helmet style in the cartoon, I think.
The cartoon?
A minor, well, the original show.
Yeah. Obviously, this is non-canon, but not as non-canon as the Dragon Ball film is.
But, yep.
The one thing I've only watched the first episode, maybe the second, but I have not got as far as Icky at the very least. I assume his Phoenix pose looks cooler in the comic in that he's not flapping his arms because it's a static picture. It looks a little goofy when he strikes the Phoenix pose and then flaps his arms.
He's got like the ponytail things as well.
Oh, that they were fine, I thought, because they were like the Phoenix's tail. That worked for me, but yeah, the flapping of the arms seemed a little goofy, but
I think that's why I said it would be good to see what these look like without, like, the animation effects.
Yeah, I think if it was eight, I'd be fine, because I'd be like, oh, yeah, that's something you can imitate as a little kid, say.
Oh, and you would be. Like, if I was watching this when I was going to school and stuff, I'd be in character. I'd be loving it. But I don't like all the Saints. I think Shun is a bit weak. Not ability-wise, but he's a bit crap. Well, I think it's more of his character.
What did he do in the entire film?
I don't know enough about him. What's his power again? If you remind us of his power, I might remember.
I can't remember. He got his ass kicked pretty quickly by Orpheus.
To be fair, that guy's really strong. Like that, the harp power is very strong.
Strings off his lyre at him. I don't think he did anything. I don't think he got to show us what his power was.
He showed up, got his ass kicked, and then gave a little bit of power to Seiya.
That being said, he still had more characterization than anybody in the Mask Man show.
True.
At least I had an idea of each of the team's personalities, but they had twice as long to play with, so.
Yeah. Give them a break. Give Mask Man 40 minutes and it'll be an epic.
Yeah, quite possibly. I quite liked the designs of the movie original characters. Yeah, I think even like the bit at the start with the saving the kid from getting run over worked for me too.
I don't think it's as good as the first episode though.
No, it's not. Cause that's obviously working off the comic, whereas this is creating something wholesale. And I think, yeah, it kind of helps if you know what the old Golden Apple reference is because they make no explanation of it here. Is that's the apple which Eris used to, didn't she write on it like for the most beautiful and then threw it in front of like three of the gods, Greek gods, one of which was Athena. And then them arguing over who should have the apple, led to the Trojan War.
Well, that's cool.
So yeah, it's all, there is actual myth they're using as a reference.
Yeah,
there.
Yeah.
I think this was enjoyable. I enjoyed this.
Yeah, I did as well. I enjoyed everything.
Is it
But
I think this one, I don't know, it's hard to rank, but this one was generally good. The animation was pretty good, and I wouldn't mind seeing that in 4:3. Just to sort of see what you're missing out on, actually.
Yeah, this was the one which I felt suffered the most from being sliced, because the action's often just 2-on-2, and it's focused heavily on the people rather than their surroundings, which meant felt claustrophobic. Which I think would have not been the case, if we were seeing the entire picture.
I actually forgot this was 87. I was thinking, this looks really, I don't know whether it's like the encoding of the video that we watched it on, but it looks really good. Very clean looking. A lot cleaner than I would imagine.
Is it because it's a remaster, so?
It is, yes.
Yeah.
Well, they've done a great job. It just looks a lot more recent. Well, I mean, it's just all the colours look so crisp, and I like the look of it.
Then we finally got Dragon Ball the movie 2, Sleeping Princess in Devil's Castle. Okay, so my notes only go so far because I went and got my lunch at some point, and then I was eating my lunch, so I couldn't carry on writing notes. But we open up with very similar, like, looking visuals to what we saw the last time we looked at a Dragon Ball film. With, like, black on red. I was like, is this, like, a Ralph Bakshi influence? I was thinking from, like, his aborted Lord of the Rings thing. I know it's been a long time since I've seen it, so I can't say for sure.
I can't remember if this whole thing looked like how Dragon Ball anime was. I kind of need to watch it and compare them. I couldn't tell if the animation was movie quality or just standard anime quality.
And the narrator's giving us like a Sleeping Beauty plot. And now I kind of wish I'd go back and watch that again, because I wonder if it does actually match up with what is actually happening with the Sleeping Beauty. Or whether it is just the version that Roshi tells them. Or one of the two versions that Roshi tells them. Because he's just trying to get people out of his hair. And then we get the opening credits. And I was like, hey, this gang's all here. Goku, Bulma, Oolong, Yamcha, Puhar, and Roshi. And which made me think, like, it'd be kind of fun to do, like, a story with just that gang again. With them, with their current ages. But I'm sure it'll never happen. And then we see Master Roshi, perving over some workout videos. this is after we have like a fun cloud riding sequence with Goku. And they, spot something approaching the island. What could it be? Well, it's a wild Krillin.
He looks so cool. The way he's shot on that boat. It looks great.
And he also wants to be trained. And he's willing to pay in girly mags.
He knows what's up.
So this threw me at first.
Yes, this is
this is the first hint that it's non-canon.
Yes, it's a massive hint. Because it's an entirely new origin for Krillin. And then these two boys give each other a bunch of sass until he decides that, okay, whichever one of you brings me back a pitchy pitchy gal, I'll train you. And I don't want you to just go and find any pitchy pitchy gal, because like one of you can't even remember what I'm telling you. So you need to go to the Devil's Castle and bring back the Sleeping Princess, because she's a real pitchy pitchy gal. And then we cut to lunch or launch, depending on your translation, and she is also wondering about the Sleeping Princess and Devil's Castle. I was like, oh, okay, right, Krillin and Lunch are in this, and they weren't in the credits. And again, neither of them are being introduced in a way they're introduced in the comic. So I guess we're thoroughly into our non-canon. And so apparently they can't use the cloud. They've got to get there on their own feet. And so the pair of them race towards Devil's Castle. And while they're doing that, the rest of the gang show up looking for Goku. And he tells them that they've gone to have fun at an amusement park. I get the feeling that Roshi doesn't know entirely what this Devil's Castle involves at all.
He may just be guessing that it even exists.
That's true, yes.
I got the feeling that Roshi just made something up to get rid of them for a bit.
Coincidence that it does.
Then the kids are at the castle. It's kind of lots of really nice background illustrations in here. I was like, there's a few backgrounds which are like very H.R. Geiger influenced, and then you get to that final gun at the end.
The cannon. Like,
yes.
Yeah.
Meanwhile, Yamcha's flying in a little flying mobile with the rest of them, and they get attacked by, I don't know, ghouls, demons, not quite sure what these random other monsters are. And they crash, and Bulma wakes up inside a bedroom where she's met by a friendly gentleman called Lucifer. And she's too smitten to be suspicious that apparently they didn't rescue the other three because they didn't look appealing, and that the butler's wandering around with this giant syringe.
That is Bulma's typecast, though. She's a genius, but she becomes a complete idiot when it comes to guys when she's young. No, let's just keep it going. She's a complete idiot when it comes to guys.
Then Krillin and Goku get run over by an orc army of some kind. And
they've got guns. When I first saw like the bullets on their straps, I was like, do they have guns? And yes, they do. So I was pleased.
And then their boss finds them and discovers they're looking for the sleeping princess. So then the other guys come back and they have to fight them. Lucifer asks Bulma how old she is. She's a spirited 16. And he's like, oh, such a long time since we've had a 16-year-old vintage.
And is she lying about her age here?
No, I think she's 16 at this point.
Okay.
I believe the cartoon is lying about Goku's age. I think they reduced his age.
Right, okay.
To younger, but, it's not until she basically thinks everyone's in fancy dress. It's not until she's like literally tied to a chair that she realizes something's up. And yeah, meanwhile, Goku and Krillin thinks this is a chance to go and get the treasure while Goku's busy fighting these monsters, but he gets carried away by a two-headed Pteranodon. And there's loads of fighting sequences. There's some repeated sequences, particularly with that one monster whose giant head lurches out of the swamp.
Out of this, the one that shuts its mouth.
Yes.
Yep.
Venus flytrap thing.
Meanwhile, Oolong and Yamcha and Puar have infiltrated the monster party as well by Oolong by transforming into one. And what I liked with Puar and Yamcha, Yamcha's wearing the armor of one, and then Puar has turned himself into the mask of one. Which does lead to a great bit later when Oolong's transformation has worn off. And then the mask starts talking, and the eyes popping out. And it's like, oh, yeah, of course that's Puar. And then Puar transforms to tell Oolong off, and then they're all in trouble. Lunch shows up, and turns out the sleeping princess is a diamond. And their big plan is, after they've got everybody captured, which kind of happens because Lunch manages to make herself sneeze with her own hair, and she transforms back into the ineffective, nice version of herself.
I've never seen that character before, you know.
Have you not? I don't know why.
No, she's no. So I was like, what's going on?
Hang on. You've never seen Lunch?
No.
She's in the new Dragon. She's in Battle of the Gods.
But does she do the sneeze thing?
I need to rewatch it. I think when Krillin's a policeman, I think she's also involved somehow.
Right. I've never seen her focus on like the sneeze thing, so I was like, but obviously I understood it, you know.
Well, yeah, I think it's one of those weird. I think it's one of the things in Dragon Ball which is never explained why she transforms. So I'm surprised there hasn't been an arc in Super explaining exactly why she transforms, but so they want to use this Diamond. The blood thing was only just so they couldn't toast the success of their plan, which is apparently this is just the right time for the moon to fill this diamond with its energy, and then they can use it to load into a cannon and blow the sun out of the way. And of course, once you realize that, you're like, okay, I can see where the story's going now. If there's a full moon involved.
I couldn't see it. I forgot about that. So I was pleasantly surprised when, like, the way they deliver it. I thought, oh yeah. Cause I didn't think he ever was ever shown, like, transforming at this stage, but I guess obviously he does.
Yes, cause all the other guys have been, now this is something I didn't understand what was happening here. Is they're encased in rock, or have they just been walled up with cement? I don't know.
It looks painful.
I thought that was one where we were not to question it.
Yes. They've all got their hands and heads, apart from Pua, who's just got his head sticking through. And of course, the full moon comes up, and Goku turns into a giant ape, causing everyone to escape, but then he goes chasing after them and tries to eat lunch. And the other guys... Krillin had earlier seen that Goku got his tail grabbed and he lost his power, so they're like, quick, grab his tail! And then quick, Pu'ar, turn into a pair of scissors and cut it off.
I winced at that. I just couldn't help but feel it feels painful.
Oh, I thought you meant the way it happened. I kind of accepted how it happened, just thinking...
Oh, I think that's fine. Yeah. Like, I'm fine with that, but I just... Oh, it looks so painful.
I thought that the Great Ape was really well animated with the transformation and everything. It really reminded me of the Saiyan Saga stuff.
Yeah.
And I know it's probably the opposite way around, but I don't remember the Great Ape stuff in Dragon Ball being as good.
Yeah.
Because of... I've been rewatching it.
Yeah, they get over quite how threatening he is in that, and how uncontrollable. He's fairly uncontrollable in his human form as well in this movie, in that he constantly has to be steered towards what he should be doing. he's momentarily bothered, that his tail's been cut off. And he becomes more bothered about where his clothes have disappeared to.
That happens in a show. That's literally a copy of what he does in a show at some point. Yeah. He just kind of goes, yeah, well, okay. And that's always been Goku. I think if Goku lost his arm or leg, he'd shake it off.
And so they give him Oolong's trousers.
Which I did like. Looks good.
And then we see this big H.R. Giger cannon. And they knock it off its axis, and so it ends up shooting Lucifer instead of the sun.
With a Kamehameha, not just,
that's true.
Over or anything. Yes. It's a big deal.
Yeah, got to get the Kamehameha.
That was a good-looking Kamehameha as well.
It was.
And then they head back to Master Roshi's Island, and of course, they've actually brought back the a Pitchy Pitchy girl for him in the form of the nice version of lunch. Well, nice... non-dangerous version, I think, is... Yes.
Ditsy.
Yeah, and then she sneezes, and then... I do like how neither lunch knows what the other lunch is doing. And so the other lunch is like, where the hell am I? Who are you? And starts machine-gunning.
She shoots him in the head.
He does, yes.
Where did the gun come... Did she walk in with the gun?
I think she's always got it there somehow. I think it's like the sledgehammer in City Hunter. It can always appear when required.
Oh, it's funny on the head. Yeah, he's bleeding. There's a drop of blood. I just want to hark quickly back to the beginning where Master Roshi's watching the aerobics and stuff. Literally on Instagram, I think it was maybe yesterday or today, Asuka, the wrestler, somebody must have edited in Master Roshi watching the TV from possibly the same scene, and they've got footage of her training. And I was like, God, timing.
I think check out
her Instagram.
I think she did it herself.
Oh, did she?
Quite far. Well, I saw it on Twitter. Maybe on Instagram it was reposting somebody else's. But
I'm going to pretend she did it herself because she's...
She is a big Dragon Ball fan.
Yeah. I was like, God, timing.
Yeah, there's a good chance she was probably taken by parents to go and see this film. But I was struck the same because I saw it this morning and then a few hours later I watched this film. I was like, is that the same thing? Having said that, I'm sure that scene is in plenty of Dragon Ball episodes.
Yeah, he's probably watching something pervy.
Then they all say peace to us. And that's your evening over. You've been out, seen, just over two hours of Toei Entertainment.
I don't know if this would have been hard to sit through or not, especially with kids. I wonder if there's a little interlude for the kids
who've got up on sugar and...
I don't... You go into the cinema with some little kids for... Is this 2 hours? 2 hours 10?
I think it depends how much it grips them. If it's not gripping...
And we got the short versions. We got the versions without all the credits.
Yeah, that's true.
It's true. So, let me out!
They would have been up and down non-stop needing to go for little loo breaks and stuff.
I mean, that happens with normal size screenings of stuff, so yeah, they'll have been...
I guess. Also, when one set of credits comes up as a parent, you go, right, go now, you know.
Yeah, hurry. I don't want to miss Mask Man.
No, that's when you go. You go during Mask Man.
Yeah. The cinema's empty, apart from one horn dog lacrosse player.
So my notes from this is, I think that the opening to this, why did I make a note of that? It seems like it's a scene from Berserk.
See, I just thought it's very reminiscent from the Dead Zone scene, which we commented where I was like, this looks really good, where you see all the undead army walking along and stuff.
I thought that felt very Berserk-like at some points. My obvious note, is this from the anime or not? Massive nod to Journey to the West. When he tell him to go west, they go, but that's south.
Yes.
No, go west. I feel like they were purposely trying to shoehorn that reference in.
Yeah, that struck me as well. And and obviously the irony is they're going west and they're encountering like western monsters in the form of a vampire.
Yeah, that's very Toriyama to do. And then they've got the I think they gave Goku his tail back in the whole intro to just give him the license to cut it off and use the grape ape again. And then obviously they could use the Kamehameha. I think the only thing that was a shame, but we're early on, so I can't remember when Krillin started learning energy moves. It would have been fun if it had been Goku using the Kamehameha and Krillin using his Kienzen. But I can't remember when he learns Destructo Disc, so.
No, I've no idea. I did look when he showed up in the anime and it was like over a year previously on the TV show, so. It wasn't like you were getting a sneak preview of Krillin. He was already well established, so I think this is just like firmly telling you the movies are their own continuity, separate to the TV continuity.
Yeah. This was enjoyable. I think Saint Seiya suffered more from being an anime film than this did, actually. Saint Seiya did the normal thing of get every character on the screen using their special moves and let's wrap up the story.
Yeah, partly it feels like it because it's quite similar to that Dr. Slump movie we watched, but it feels more like the tone is similar to a Dr. Slump movie. The villains aren't super scary. They've got a degree of comedy to them. The threat is technically world-ending, but it's played off lightly because Bulma's constantly going, he's planning to stop us from being able to go to the beach. I mean, he's planning to destroy the sun. So it's got that lightness of touch, which obviously is the transitional period between Slump and Dragon Ball Z. That's what I was thinking of, is the 78 Lord.
Yeah, I knew what you meant. I've seen it like when I was younger, I think, but that's scary.
Yeah.
Now that film's scary. Yeah.
But that's what I think they're going for, at least the influences on those.
Yeah.
That particular design of like silhouetted monsters in front of a scary red background.
I mean, they even do it when Bulma kind of walks into the feast room or whatever you want to call it, where like all the henchmen are like scattered around the outskirts and stuff. It looks a bit like that. Not quite as good as the opening shot, but.
Yeah.
Did that ever get a Blu-ray release, that Lord of the Rings one?
I have no idea. It's,
it should.
Well, it should. There's a lot of, I've just shown you guys a, fairly, nice screenshot. There's other screenshots of the orcs, which are, like, much more clearly men in masks, but who've been rotoscoped.
Oh, yeah.
Fairly rotoscoped.
That's even scarier. Yeah, I enjoyed this as well. I don't know if...
this was my favourite thing of the four.
I like seeing Krillin like this. I love this iteration of Krillin, where he's a bit of a dickhead, to be honest. He is. He's like...
He is at first.
And I like that aspect of him. Like, I've always known him as Dragon Ball Z Krillin, Goku's friend Krillin, whereas I like this.
I can't
how old is he meant to be at
dick.
This point?
He's pretty much the same age as Goku, maybe a year or two older than Goku.
And how old's Goku meant to be at this?
Well, I think he's 12 in the anime.
Right.
I think he's supposed to be like much closer to Bulma's age in the comic, if I remember correctly.
I like to think Krillin's actually like an adult in this. He's just a very short, angry man.
Well, I like the whole reference to Krillin in Z is probably a lot more pure. The whole reference to they cover it in the anime as well, but Krillin can't ride Kintuan because of his impure mind.
Yes.
Yeah.
So that happens in the anime. He tries to ride and he keeps falling through.
God, little does he know he would get with an android later in life.
So Krillin was 17 when he first died.
Oh. What in? Oh, it's a Dragon Ball death, is it?
It is.
Does
yes.
Piccolo kill him?
I think so. It's during the King Piccolo.
Is it Daimon King Piccolo?
Yeah. Something like that. He gets killed by Tambourine.
Is that one of the sons?
Yes, I think so. Yes, it is.
I've still not finished all of Dragon Ball. I need to go back to it. I think I got up to episode 80 or something. I got past the first tournament.
So when does he start drawing the dots on his head? Because he doesn't have them in this, does he? Or does he?
I thought he did.
Does he?
Yeah, he's got them.
I must have been blind to it then.
Dot blindness,
yeah. Oh, well.
So, see if I can open it quickly.
Are you sure he's got this?
Krillin becomes... So according to the wiki, these events occurred on September the 10th, 749. So if we then go back and look at Krillin's wiki page... And we can find out his birthday. So it's October the 29th. So I'm going to say 749. So he would be 12 here. Soon to turn 13.
He's pretty strong for a 12-year-old. But not as strong as some of the Seer dudes. Who look twice as age. Well, three times as age.
They do look very different. It's funny how they all age in the show.
Ah, short, fat Krillin is the best Krillin. He really is. He's great.
On his current age, Goku's current age, yes, he'd be 12 as well, I think. Or maybe he might be 11 even in this.
See, that makes more sense.
No, he'd be 12, because we don't know exactly what day he was born.
But if we did...
There's so many good screenshots of Krillin in this. If you just stop and take
a
look at them,
there are. Yes, but I think they're having a lot of fun drawing his face.
Oh, absolutely!
My favourite bit with Krillin is when he thinks he's got away, and he's been pulled off by that pteranodon off into the air, and he bites the pteranodon's claw, and the smug look he's got. And then suddenly he's plummeting to his death. And that's where you get the bit where isn't pure enough in thought to ride the cloud.
Although it's a stupid move, he seems a lot less stupid in this.
Yeah,
than Dragon Ball Z.
I think the key at this point in the time is he's Goku's rival. And so he hasn't realized how where he is on the pecking order at this point. So yeah, I don't know whether it's when he dies that he turns or whether he's already realized it before he dies. And then you get, Yajirobe later on, who's the guy who is at that point as powerful as Goku, but then never trains. So never can keep up with Goku. but again, I guess he doesn't care because he never cared to train in the first place. So he's just happy being however powerful he just happened to be born at. Yeah, that was a fun bunch of things. It's fun to watch them all in a lump and get to watch some of these tokusatsu things, even though don't necessarily understand what's going on. Well, I understand the plot, just don't connect to the characters in any way.
Yeah.
Not sure I'd want to watch more Metalder over, like, which one did we watch last time? It was...
Oh, the detective one.
Yeah, I think I preferred that one to this one.
Oh, yeah, 100%. 100%. But I think there's a lot to like about Metalder, or Matilda. Call it Matilda. I think I like the design of the robot. Like his transformation phase, I suppose. I think it looks pretty good. Because it kind of looks weird, like the contrast in blue and red, but I think it works well. Give me more.
Anything else before we play a game?
Oh, a game? I can't possibly delay the game.
Okay, so obviously Dragon Ball is our two leads, are Masako Nozawa and Mayumi Tanaka with Goku and Krillin. But do you know which anime has Mayumi, which anime has Masako, or which anime has both? Let's find out in a game called Mayumi, Masako, or Both.
Oh, God.
Let me randomize this list, and I'll start asking some questions of you. Lewis, are you off mute?
Yep.
Okay. Let's start with you, then.
Oh, he's getting his answers up, isn't he? Are you two sharing documents?
Okay.
Lewis wins. I'm going to call you.
Lewis, Galaxy Express 39, does that have Mayumi or Masako or both?
Both.
No, it does not. Anthony, do you know? Your choices are lessened now. Is it Mayumi or is it Masako?
Masako, I think.
That is correct. She plays Tetsuro Hoshino. Anthony.
Yes.
Karakuri Kengo Den Musashi Lord.
That's got them both in.
That does not have both of them in.
Has none of them in.
Lewis.
Mayumi.
There's no Mayumi. It's Mayumi or Masako.
Damn it.
Which one is it? Mayumi or Masako?
Mayumi.
That is incorrect. It is Masako playing Musashi himself. Right, back to you, Lewis. Machine Ayuden Wataru.
I'm going to say both.
That is incorrect. Anthony.
That's a Mayumi one.
That is correct. It's 2 points to you. Anthony. The Little Bits.
The Little Bits.
The Little Bits, yes.
Mayumi.
That is correct. She played Lily Bit. I think that was her first big role. Huh. Lewis. Fishing Enthusiast Sanpei.
Both.
That is incorrect.
I've got a I'm not going to give away my theory. I think it's Masako.
That is correct, yes. So while the character looks like Luffy, it is it is actually Masako doing the voice. Where are we now? We're back to Anthony.
Back to me?
Urusei Yatsura.
Ooh. I'm going to say both for this.
That is correct.
Oh, yes!
Masako plays Kintaro, and Mayumi plays Ryunsuke. Lewis, the second Osomatsu-kun series.
What was the Dragon Ball voice actor's name called again? What was Goku's voice actress called again?
Masako.
Masako.
That is incorrect, Anthony. Well, actually, there's no passing over because there's no way. No, it actually is, but
it could be both.
It could be,
but
both,
I'm going to
yes.
say Mayumi.
That is correct. I've given that away now myself. Anthony.
Yep.
Yu Yu Hakusho.
Misako.
Incorrect. Lewis.
Oh, damn it.
Both.
Incorrect.
I'm doing brilliantly.
Layumi Tanaka played Koenma. Final one for you, Lewis. The current series of Gegege no Kitaro.
I'm going to risk it and say both.
That is correct.
Oh, well done.
I knew that the Goku voice actor was in it. I didn't know about the other one.
Yeah, Misako plays Madame Oyaji, the dad of Kitaro. And Miyu Tanaka plays Sunakake Baba, the Sand Witch. Anthony, finally for you, One Piece.
Both.
That is correct. Yes, obviously, Miyu Tanaka plays Luffy and a couple of other characters, and Misako Nozawa plays Dr. Kuriha, the doctor who took Chopper in. Which I guess now makes, I don't think I'd ever realized it at the time, but now makes good casting because that's the character who's now 141 years old and somehow still alive. So I don't know whether that was commenting on the longevity of Masako Nozawa's career, by casting her in that role. But, yeah, that's your lot. That is it. So Anthony, you won 7-1.
Ho 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 ho. I'm proud.
I was surprised there wasn't more. There is a few other ones, but you wouldn't have heard of the show. But
I was kind of going through it. If I say both, there'd be enough in there that I could probably get enough correct answers.
Well, actually, at one point, thought there was going to be a case of there was no more boths.
There was only three.
You were going to mention, yeah.
Righty ho, that is your lot. Anything you want to plug, Lewis?
No, not today. I'm going to plug enjoying these, going out there and finding these great movies and watching them.
Well, more importantly, staying indoors and finding these great movies.
Yeah, these are things that you can enjoy whilst you are self-isolating.
Yes. Anthony, anything you want to plug?
Self-isolate with me when I Twitch stream on Twitch, which is And Ask You. We may have finished Vagrant Story by the time you listen to this.
And, yeah, we'll be back here next time with the Anime That Didn't Make Us with Niall, hopefully. That's the plan.
Good.
Yeah, we got lots of, very wholesome, uplifting shows.
I'm doing very boring shows.
Well, no, have you not looked at the story, the plot of the one you picked? It's not quite.
No.
It's not, the title may suggest one thing, the actual story is. Something slightly different.
I look forward to it now.
Now, I was the only one who picked a World Masterpiece Theatre one, so.
Ah, damn. See, that was my logic behind and picking what I picked. It sounded the same irk.
Rightio, we'll be back then. Cheerio.
Goodbye.
Ta-ta.
Your life's gone down the drain. Your body's wrecked with pain. There's just one thing to blame. Dynamite in the brain. Dynamite in the brain. Dynamite in the brain. Dynamite in the brain. Dynamite.